The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
Kia ora, listeners, and welcome to Hearth Tales. Apologies if you were expecting an interview this week. I have something else lined up. Hopefully you'll enjoy it just as much. Truth be known, I haven't managed to organise somebody to interview at all. We have many creative people in this region, and I just haven't managed to track somebody down and write the questions and research them and bring them into the studio and record it and all that kind of good stuff. Life has just been too damn full. We're off grid, and there's a lot of work that needed to be done around here, and then my dear mother, bless her, suffered a stroke and is now non-verbal, but is also in the other side of the world. So it's a lot of very late nights trying to sort things out and make sure she's okay and that people are caring for her and all this kind of stuff. So it's been very, very busy, and my heart's just not been in it, which is unfortunate because this is it's a beautiful thing we've got here. But like I said, there are some other things that I can talk about. We have a summer arts workshop series going on in the region, and I'll talk about that briefly. I'm going to read, well, I have a prior recording of a telling of one of my short stories, The Keeper, and a couple of poems that I've recently performed up on the Cane and Downs at a festival that went down incredibly well, so I'll retell them here, and maybe a few other bits and bobs, just for your entertainment and hopeful pleasure. So let's get on to the Summer Arts Workshop. So the Summer Arts Workshop is a new thing. The Motueka Arts Council has previously run Winter Arts Workshops, but I don't think, to my knowledge, there's been a summer one. So it's new and it's exciting, and the Winter Arts Workshops are always really well attended, and with some really exciting offerings. I think last year, I attended the Street Photography Workshop, which was fascinating. But we also had singing workshops and songwriting and all sorts of good sort of needlecraft and such. There was also an Art Biz workshop, which was fascinating too. Anyway, this time around, we've got the workshops are running from the 14th of February to the 28th of March. And if you're interested in tickets, head to the MotuekaArtsCouncil.com website, and that's where you'll be able to pick up tickets from. I urge you to do that sooner rather than later, because obviously they'll fill up quite quickly. But the things they're covering, there's a workshop on printing from nature, and there's a nature writing workshop, a land art workshop, singing, stone carving, nature photography, storytelling, mindful photography, painting clean air, which I hope I've pronounced right. I had to look it up. I believe that is painting outside. It's a very fancy term, but that sounds grand. And then there's also a sandcastle competition, which sounds like it could be fun. And I think that's open to all, which would be beautiful. So, yeah, if you're interested, I really think it's well worth it. Head to the MotuekaArtsCouncil.com website. Get tickets for that. Other things in the pipeline, I think my partner Liz is planning on offering spoon carving workshops at some point in the not too distant future here on our land, and she's a master spoon carver and a potter, and I'll hope to interview her quite soon, actually. We just need to we need to get the studios and the workshops back up and running, which has been rather challenging with our twins. As you can probably hear them in the background, so I also need to apologise for the sound quality. I'm recording this at home on my laptop, home being a small bus with the kids playing outside, so if there's background noise, please forgive me, you know. Yes. So what I'm going to do now is I will read one of the short stories, and well, I've already pre-recorded it. If you're interested in any of these, check out sonoffire.com. That's sun hyphen as in child of, so sun hyphen of hyphen fire.com. Please remember the hyphens. If you don't, you end up at something slightly more salubrious than, is that the right word, slightly, yeah, I wouldn't want to go there. But yeah, remember the hyphens in sonoffire.com. That's where you'll find my writing. And if you're interested in any of the other interviews in the Hearthtales series, you go to hearthtales.com and it should be really exciting. Okay, thank you so much.
We live in the age of dragons, my friend. They rise from their vaults and havens, hoarding without end, feasting on our sweat, gnawing the bones of the earth. We live in the age of dragons. Their fires burn the rivers dry, their lies drown the air, their laws bend towards themselves. Justice is a broken blade. We live in the age of dragons. They buy silence, they buy division, they buy our forgetting. We fight each other at their bidding, right against left, neighbour against neighbour, or they take all in plain sight. We live in the age of dragons. Hear me. These beasts will burn the world before they yield a single coin. Such is their fever. Such is the curse we bear. We live in the age of dragons, but the age of dragons will end. Rise. Not one hero, not a chosen savior. Rise all of us. Rise together. Rise as fire. Rise as oak. Rise as sea. Rise as one. From the ashes of their hoard, a just world will rise. The many shall be the slayers of the dragons. Together we shall take back the world. Rise.
So that was We Live in the Age of Dragons, a poem I wrote a couple of months ago and performed up at Cannon Downs for the first time. Next I'm going to be sharing a recording of The Keeper. It's a short story in three parts from three different perspectives, because I kind of love the idea of how things triangulate when you have the same story but in from three different angles, and you get to see the truth somewhere in the middle. Potentially a little bit horror, but not really. I don't think so. It's quite a heavy Jungian influence, such as most of my work. Anyway, enjoy.
Chapter 1. It is the most tempestuous night I can recall since my shift on this godforsaken rock began. I wish I'd never taken the job. Most lighthouses run themselves now. This one still needs hands. The offer had seemed a dream. The Bahamas. A weatherboard cottage came with a post, not unlike the ones back in New Zealand. And would grow up with salt in their hair. We would be fed well. We would live in paradise. The work still smelled of metal and kerosene. Resistant. Stubbornly human. All I had to do was keep the mechanism cranked so the light flashed true and keep the fuel topped. For that, the ship stayed clear of the reef. For that, we were trusted and well paid. Earlier that afternoon, a raven had found its way into the lamp room. It perched atop the mechanism, black against brass, tapping its beak lightly as if testing the limits of the thing. Ravens do not belong here. I knew it without needing to check. Gulls, yes. Frigate birds, sometimes, but this. It did not flinch when I entered. Its black eyes held me patient, unblinking. I drove it toward the door. It left reluctantly. When it was gone, the room felt larger and colder. That night, as the storm rose, I thought of the raven again, its gaze lingering in ways I could not place. I would have given anything to be back in an English pub, or deep in the New Zealand bush, tui and piwaka waka calling, honeydew in the air. I had not known the Bahamas to feel so hostile. Waves hammered the reef. Somewhere out there were boats. It was my responsibility to keep them out there. I battened down and thought of my beloved and the children asleep in the cottage. The coffee pot gurgled. Solitude stretches differently at night. The door rattled, then thumped. At first I thought it was the weather. I listened for rhythm, for intent. After a few sips of coffee, I opened it. A man stood outside, soaked, bedraggled. A captain, I think. He said nothing. He looked like someone hauled back from somewhere he had not yet finished leaving. I pulled him inside and shut the door. As the beam swept the shore, I saw it. A ship, smashed against the reef, too close, too broken, and far too quiet for what it must have carried. Shock gave way to something harder to name. Had I failed? I wrapped him in a blanket, told him to shed his wet clothes, offered coffee or rum. He nodded at the rum. Some simple questions, his ship, a nod. His command, another. The only one, again. What troubled me was not the wreck, but the way he answered, as if the questions had already been asked of him. His uniform was civilian, a cruise ship. I did not need to speak the number. I knew it to be vast. I planned to call it in, once the storm had passed. There was little to do before morning. He sat for hours, staring into nothing. By midnight, neither of us had moved. He inhabited whatever remained of him. I held the room. At 3 a.m, there came a gentle tap at the door, a knock, a courtesy. The captain jolted, his chair scraped hard against the floor. He shook his head at me, pleading that something passed between us that required no words. Outside stood a girl, 13 perhaps. Rain slicked her hair flat. Her bare feet rested on stone. Beside her stood a fawn. Its black eyes were steady, unblinking. The same darkness I had seen in the lamp room that afternoon. The girl glanced at me only briefly, then tilted her head past me to the captain. Recognition moved between them. "I'm sorry," she said gently. "Did I miss you?" The captain found his voice all at once. He bolted for the spiral stairs, shouting words that no longer belonged to any human language. The girl and fawn passed me. I felt them before I saw them. A gentle brushing, a sudden lightness, a loosening. I slid down the door frame, and the world dimmed. Morning came. The captain sat at the table, upright, hands folded. His face had settled into something almost peaceful. Not relief, not sleep. Just the stillness of a man who had finally stopped running. No sign of struggle. No one could say when he died. The storm had passed. The light had held. The beach was cleared, fewer bodies recovered than the manifest held. Whether it was the sea that took them, or something else, I could not say. I said nothing. Out beyond the reef, the ship remained, steel torn open, cabins exposed to the sun, a carcass too heavy to sink, too broken to return. The beam swept over it again and again. Nothing more came ashore until my own days here were done, many decades later. In the years that followed, there were questions from officials, from families, from men who had never stood alone with a working light and a dead man at their table. I answered what was asked and no more. The sea is good at erasing details, and I learned to be the same. Yet some nights, when the beam swept the reef and found only water, I felt the weight of what I had kept. Not the captain, not the girl, but the space between them. The moment when I could have spoken and chose not to. The light still turned. Ships passed safely, but I came to understand that keeping the mechanism alive was not the same as keeping myself clean. Chapter 2. It was inevitable I would end up captaining a vessel. My father did. His father before him. Nearly every man in my family has lived this life at sea. My parents met on the Channel Ferry, What none of us expected was that the captaining I was to do was for a cruise ship in the Bahamas. I never found a woman I would call a life partner. There were many affairs, usually married women. They liked the uniform, the authority. I was never much of a catch outside of my rank, but uniform does a strange thing to desire. For 30 years, I lived inside this ease. Cabins cleaned, meals delivered, dirty laundry washed, consequences delayed until the next port. On board, everything is managed, even guilt. Lately, the sea has begun to feel less like freedom and more like a habit. I catch myself imagining a small cottage on the Devon coast, a garden. This voyage's temptation takes the shape of a woman in her 30s. Black hair, dark skin, from Botswana. Beautiful in a way that draws attention without asking for it. Her husband is hard to miss. He moves slowly, as if measuring each step. Built like a wall, watching even when he appears not to be. I noticed him. Men like that mistake stillness for authority. And through it all, the light at that far-off rock pierces the night, impartial, turning over every corridor, every face, every choice I make. She tells me he tends the old ways. She says it lightly, as if translating something she should not tell. They wear no gold, no signs of wealth, only a single ring each. I notice it and dismissed it. We meet when he is elsewhere. The ship is generous with corners, distractions and alibis. I tell myself she wants this. I tell myself I'm not the first man. I tell myself she has already decided. Women like that always do. When he finds us, it is without drama. A door opens, time tightens. He throws me once. I hit the wall. A second time, I'm already moving, running past faces that register what I am. Look away. Authority drains quickly when it is stripped bare. I'm not saying the storm came because of him, but I have sailed long enough to know when the air changes its mind mid-breath. I should be on the bridge, I know that. Instead, I hide deep in the ship, where the engines thrum and the walls sweat. I feel the first impact through my feet, a long shudder, then another, metal complaining, the hull is given up. The alarms come too late. So does courage. People move past me with eyes already elsewhere. The ship lists, screams, rise and scatter. Water finds its way in, patient and cold. When I jump, I do not look back. I fled from my duty and did not waste time naming it. I swam toward the light. I know it is still burning. And in that light, far across the reef, I sense the unblinking eye, marking every failure, every escape, impartial and eternal. Chapter 3. We had known each other since childhood. She noticed my gifts before I understood them myself. When the voices first came, it was she who taught me how to listen without being taken. Because of that, our town prospered. The sick were eased, quarrels settled, and land remained generous. In her, I was given more than any man deserves. Still, there were times I wished I had been ordinary. To carry such gifts is to never truly be alone. If it was not people bringing their pain, it was the unseen. Pressing close, always asking, always present. I served faithfully, but I longed for quiet. That hunger is what brought us onto the ship. At home, the land speaks, the rivers remember, but the sea belongs to no voice I know. I thought there I might rest, that we might step outside our names for a while. Instead, I wondered. Bright rooms, endless motion, distractions stacked upon distractions. I called it freedom. I called it rest. I did not see her drift until it was too late. When I found them, Something in me broke open. It was not anger, as men usually know it. It was older, larger, a tearing loose. I reached outward, not with words, with need. Something answered. I did not command it. I only failed to close the door. What came was vast and indifferent. It took what was offered and more besides. When it was finished, there was no triumph, only wreckage. Only the sound of water settling back into itself. And the beam still turned, turning over us all. Impartial, eternal, holding our story. The price was not his alone. It was hers. It was mine. The sea carried the rest.
Now I'm going to read probably my most obvious love poem. I mean, all the poetry I write has an element of love in it, even if it's wrapped in fury or rage or longing. There's always a love element to it. This is called When You, I Am. When you show me affection, I weep with the awe of belonging. When you look at me deeply, I awaken to myself. When you say here, my ears rejoice. When you give me advice, I listen as though hearing prophecy. When you rest your head on me, my body finds its purpose. When you are disappointed in me, I feel the fracture of my own truth. When you dance, my heart rejoices. When you garden, I witness creation itself. When you are naked, I behold the truth of womanhood. When you laugh, the universe smiles. When you create, I glimpse all possibility. When you doubt yourself, I see only your truth. When time etches itself upon you, I love the story written there. Each line a testament, each scar a map of constellations. You are not lessened, you're becoming radiant. River and mountain, tender hand and fierce will, seed in soil, blossom of earth. When we grow together, our hearts learn the language of stars, wordless, holy. Our growth is the quiet altar where love becomes its own prayer. As we grow old, I delight in each line upon your skin, each silver thread a vow renewed, each day a prayer to the gift of you, the joy of walking to the end together. You are the song the earth keeps singing, and I am the man who hears it, the man who answers. Let me be your witness, your shelter, your companion in dark and light. Let me hold you without binding, walk beside you without leading or following. You are the great gift of my life, and I will spend all my strength to honour what is holy in us. And finally, this is a reading of that I pre-recorded of the poem A Son of Fire, and it talks about ancestry and what kind of ancestor you're going to be. The title Son of Fire actually comes from the meaning of my surname McCoy, and so it's an honouring of that. Sorry for all the ums I'm thinking. And it's hot and the windows are closed to keep the noise out, but enjoy, I hope. And like I said, if you want to hear more or read more, sun-of-fire.com, and I'll hopefully be putting together a book at some point when life gets more congenial and friendly.
I am the son of fire, born of smoke, of persistence, of stars. Blood borrowed from my ancestors, a gift carried forward, burning through time. They walked through famine, through flood, through war. Their feet bled, their hearts broke, still they strode on. And I am the proof they lived. Their light survives in me, their unfinished prayers burn in my throat. I am not the end, I am the bridge. The living spark between what was and what must come. Generations stand behind me. Generations wait ahead. Their songs fill my lungs. Their courage builds my spine. Their hope watches from every star. So I will create. I will choose well. I will plant, protect, love, rage, and rise. For I am the son of fire. But this fire is not mine alone. It is the breath of the ancestors. It is the promise of the unborn. It is the torch we must pass, burning clean, burning bright, burning just. Take it. Take it in your hands and ask yourself, how will you carry the fire for those yet to come?
Oh, go on then. It looks like I've got time for just one more. You lucky people, you. Yeah, this one is called An Offering. And it came to mind whilst I was stood in the sea over in Golden Bay and thinking about what with life, you know, the what you leave behind and what's important. There we go.
When my hour comes, I will join my father. I will ask the sea to take me, to spare my loved ones the beeps and clinging of a hospital bed. No stone or urn, no anchor to tend, no small plot to keep. If my offering, a feast for the fishes, is refused, and my corporeality is returned to shore, find a quiet, sunny place, and feed me to an acorn. Let it grow into a mighty oak, hang a swing from its boughs, let the children of my children play, let their parents rest in the shade. Give not a penny to the world of men. None shall profit from my passing, save children, birds, and fishes. For it is to them my heart belongs.
Well, there you go. That was hopefully a rather special edition of Hearth Tales. I hope you enjoy what you've heard, and I hope to get back to normal programming in the next episode. Yeah, like I said, if you like what you heard, check out sun-of-fire.com and hearthtales.com. And if you are a creative person, I know I've said this already, but if you are a creative person and you would love to be interviewed, or you support creative people, or you work in the arts, or anything that is related, please get in touch and save me a job, and let's have a talk. That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.